host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the first hour, they're going to be those of Betty Martini, and we're going to be talking about how they're poisoning the American people with aspartame, but they're poisoning them with so many things. So many of the drugs that are released by the Federal Drug Administration are not safe, and if you saw 60 Minutes last weekend, they actually had a section on a drug that is used during cardiac surgery that was killing about 1,000 people a month. And the Bayer company knew it, and they went right ahead and kept it on the market and concealed the truth for a good long period of time as they were amassing profits of $1 billion a year. And the Federal Drug Administration knew it, and what did they do? Well, they put out a little black box warning on the package insert, saying, you know, there might be some problems here. Understand that we're being poisoned with mercury and in the vaccines that they're giving our children and our elderly people and pregnant women. And we're certainly poisoning the people with fluoride in the water, and they're fluoridating the wheat now, so that when you get wheat, why, of course, they have about the... Actually, they fumigate with fluoride, and so when you get your wheat, you have about the same level you have in your toothpaste. Only they tell you when you have if you swallow the toothpaste, go to a poison control center. They're doing that with our wheat. They're fumigating grains with fluoride, and they know how toxic it is. But right now, we have with us on the line Betty Martini, who's really given her life to try to expose aspartame, which is a deadly poison. And they know it's a deadly poison. It breaks down into methanol and formaldehyde after ingested. And for 15 years before it was released, thanks to Donald Rumsfeld back in the early 1980s, for 15 years before it was released, the FDA refused to allow this to be put in food because they knew it was a deadly poison. And now, of course, we have people working for government who are doing everything they can to cover up the truth. But Betty is there on the front lines trying to get the truth out. And recently there was an effort to get the legislation through in Hawaii so that they would actually ban the use of aspartame in foods there, and she almost got something through in New Mexico. And she is incessant in this. In fact, when she went into Great Britain about a year ago, within the last year, they stopped her, you know, as she was going in at customs. And almost threatened her, tried to intimidate her, so she would not talk to the people there in Great Britain about how they're poisoning the people in Great Britain, too. And with that as the background, Betty Martini, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Stan, for having me.
Well, let's see. We were going to talk this evening about this recent episode. I think it was in Indiana where some student went in and killed another 5 students, and everybody said he was just such a nice guy, and he goes in there with a shotgun and a couple of pistols, and I don't know how many people he gunned down, but he eventually ended up committing suicide. And everybody's trying to figure out how this could have happened. And then it turned out he was on Prozac. But you found up some other very interesting things that we're not hearing about, you know, from Rush Limbaugh and the others. Why don't you give us your take on what really happened with this most recent of the campus shootings?
Well, first of all, why are so many kids on psychiatric drugs? You know, why are they having or exhibiting any problem that would even make a physician prescribe a drug? And as Dr. H.J. Roberts says in so many of his books, that with children killing children, you have to consider aspartame. And the reason being that it's got 50% phenylalanine in it, which as an eye fluid is neurotoxic, floods the brain, lowers the seizure threshold, and depletes serotonin. So it's actually a psycho drug, and what it does when it depletes serotonin is trigger bipolar.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Just go right ahead, Betty.
Panic attacks, paranoia, obsessive types of problems, and suicidal tendencies. Now, what most people do not know, as Dr. Roberts brings out in his medical text, is that aspartame interacts with all antidepressants. So here you have somebody who's drinking Diet Coke, and all of a sudden they exhibit bipolar symptoms, for instance, and then they turn around and put them on Prozac, which itself can cause suicidal tendencies, and it interacts. And the whole problem is the brain chemistry imbalance, and that's what aspartame is known for, is that it changes brain chemistry.
Now, what do we know about this young man, apparently? Apparently, well, he was drinking a lot of these diet drinks.
Well, we know he was drinking energy drinks, and a great deal of them have aspartame in it. Nobody's gone up and written a story on what he was drinking, but they were actually found in the hotel room. You know, he was like 27 years old and went back to this university. And also, one of the things that his father said when the reporters came was, you know, I don't want to go and relapse again with my diabetes. Well, if he's diabetic, you know what they push on diabetics is aspartame. And if he's having complications, because it not only precipitates diabetes, but simulates and aggravates diabetic retinopathy and neuropathy and interacts with insulin and destroys the optic nerve and makes diabetics go into convulsions, and the free methyl alcohol is what's making them lose their limbs. So you have to figure he's got a house full of aspartame, and it's possible that he uses it. But so this is the point that I was bringing up. Why is he on Prozac to begin with? Now we find out that he's got these psychiatric problems that he never wanted to admit, that it seemed to bother him from the articles that I've read, which means that he didn't know why he was like he is. And this is what we find with aspartame victims, like, for instance, one that was bipolar, and she was running down the street without her clothes when they picked her up, but she didn't even remember it. And as soon as she got off aspartame, she was just fine. But they do things they don't know they do. You remember Abby Cormack, they were about to diagnose her with bipolar in New Zealand when I went over to help her. And one man who was also using Diet Coke and Wrigley's gum said that he had...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Betty Martini. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Betty was simply talking about this young man, the tragic, who ended up killing a number of his students and then killing himself. But, of course, he was drinking a number not necessarily were the energy drinks, and many of these energy drinks, most of them, have aspartame in them. And, of course, basically, it's the aspartame that can alter the chemistry of the mind. And, of course, then you could, if you're put on Prozac on top of that, and then, of course, he'd stop taking his Prozac. What people don't understand is that Prozac will bring out, you know, many times homicidal tendencies in people, either suicide or homicidal tendencies, one of the major problems with Prozac. And yet, of course, Betty feels that many, many people are actually... develop the mental problems that leads to the use of Prozac because they are actually using the aspartame drinks. And certainly somebody should investigate this. We know that so many of the young people who are involved in the campus shootings are on one sort or another of the psychotropic drugs. But how many of those people are on psychotropic drugs? Because they're using a poison, it was an aspartame, they're chewing Wrigley's gum, which has aspartame in it, they're drinking Diet Coke or the other diet drinks with aspartame in it. Go ahead, pick up the story, Betty.
So, also, I was talking about in New Zealand, and one man by the name of Cameron Rutherford came by to thank Abby for saving his life because he had the same problems, but he talked about this compulsive obsessive disorder where he didn't know what he was doing. You know, he was constantly vacuuming the floor all day. He was paranoid. And everywhere you went, you would hear all these problems. So what I'm saying, it's not just in the United States. Wherever I have lectured, we see all these problems. And then when you think of these drugs themselves, I know that a doctor by the name of Giovanni Faber, who wrote in a Journal of Clinical Psychiatry back in, I think it was 2003, that the effects of these antidepressant drugs with mood and anxiety disturbances, that they actually get worse with this long-term use of these drugs. You know, they're not helping, and then if they're on aspartame, they're interacting. And that's so many times they really just don't know what they're doing, and many of the aspartame victims have told me that. He said that they could not stop what they were doing, didn't know why they were doing it. Or in one case, a woman in New Zealand, she lost 7 babies on aspartame because it's an abortifacient, and one survived that was schizophrenic. And she says, I would hit that child for no reason and couldn't stop myself and had no reason of doing it. So you're talking about changing somebody's brain chemistry. And even the woman you remember that killed her 5 children, she was on Haldol drinking Diet Coke. And I talked to Dr. Walton about it, who is a psychiatrist, and he said, you know, that's a double whammy. So the woman obviously didn't know what she was doing. And people don't realize that that's exactly what aspartame is. It's a psycho drug. It's masquerading as an additive. And if you had to actually say what it is, it's an addictive, excito-neurotoxic, carcinogenic drug that interacts with all drugs and vaccines.
And, of course, if you really believe in population control, it's a very effective drug, either keeping women from getting pregnant or they'll have miscarriages after when they're carrying the child. And there really are people out there who I believe know exactly what they're doing, and many of them are working at the highest levels of our government. In fact, if you wanted to do harm, would you get a job, you know, working in some small clinic in some small community? Or would you get a job working at the Centers for Disease Control or working at the Federal Drug Administration where you could do the maximum amount of harm, and especially if you believe in population control? What a wonderful opportunity to poison the entire population, and the population doesn't know because, of course, the media is covering this up. Certainly, when you try to get onto the onto major programs and tell the story, sometimes aren't there difficulty getting the information out?
Yes. You know, or even when they do, I know a lot of it, some of the really strong stuff is edited, and it is hard to do that. But today, of course, we have reached critical mass, and with the Internet, I mean, if you just go to Google, you'll just see millions of articles on aspartame, and in the meantime, the manufacturers are denying anything's wrong with it, you know. It's all over the world in different languages, and, of course, we have operations in 38 nations, and incidentally, sweet misery, a poison world, is just about finished being made in French, and our Mission Possible Spain has just translated it into Spanish.
Now, for our listeners out there, this is a DVD. It's a DVD that we do carry, Sweet Misery and, of course, Sweet Remedy. They're both on aspartame. They're must-watching for anybody who's really concerned. And the difficulty is that the average individual is not going to understand that they are intentionally poisoning our population, because the Wrigley's, you know, the people who make their gum, they know what they're doing. The people who, you know, in making Diet Pepsi and have left that in there, is the aspartame in any of the Coke drinks today, or that they've gotten away from it?
Well, if you mean in regular Coke drinks, you know, we never know. Sometimes you think that they are trying marketing in certain areas because people have reactions to them, and then there is a 2% law. Sometimes they put it in a small amount, and we just don't know it, or it's buried in artificial and natural flavors, or the components of aspartame. And this is why it's so hard to avoid. And since you've mentioned Wrigley's, in 2004, a suit was filed against them because they know and have been told that, you know, it goes straight to the brain. It works like nitroglycerin, goes through saliva. A lot of people have seizures on aspartame gum. So instead of, they got out of it, but instead of taking it out, they turned around very arrogantly and put it in just about all of their gums except for about two. And so people who were used to chewing something like Juicy Fruit and knowing it had sugar in it wouldn't even look at the label. One man almost went off a cliff because he was already an aspartame victim, and it causes chemical hypersensitization. So when he got some again, it immediately gave him a bad reaction, and he was dizzy, which is number two on the FDA list of 92 symptoms, and could hardly handle himself behind a car, behind the wheel of a car. So, yes, Wrigley's nose, and that's the shame of it. That's what happened to Abby Cormack, who was chewing Wrigley's gum all day.
Now, she was this lady who was over in New Zealand who was really having a lot of emotional problems until you went over there and got her off of it. And you got a lot of information out in New Zealand, didn't you?
Oh, yes, and they are still at it. There's one company, Phoenix Bottling. There's a new press release about them. They're really battering aspartame. They're giving away 20,000 bottles of cola with little billboards on the back against aspartame. And they've just charged right in. So people are finding out, and people are very creative, and they're doing their own things to do it. You know, Abby has a petition to ban, and she's testified with the government. And then I've worked with the New Zealand Safe Food Campaign and also Soil and Health. And they're all working to do something against aspartame and trying their best to at least get it labeled to warn pregnant mothers and small children, but preferably a ban out of the country. And since there's only about 4 million people in New Zealand, they may succeed. We just don't know who's going to be first. We went so far with Hawaii that they deferred it to get more letters from doctors. And we certainly got enough medical reports from aspartame experts. They were given the DVD, so it would be like the experts were sitting in their room. Dr. Roberts sent them their medical text. Somebody was arguing, testifying against it because they were diabetic, not knowing that's what's caused the epidemic of diabetes. So that just like sugar company sent them all complimentary samples to show there was something healthful for diabetics. And even after we did all that, Dr. Green turned around and deferred it again, which did not give the opportunity of the committee who had all this information to vote on it. So therefore, it means it cannot be heard again this year. So there is now a Senate bill that we're working on, and there's only about 24 hours left where they can, the Senate can actually schedule their bill meeting and committee meeting, where this is another bill to ban aspartame in Hawaii, and people have been working on that all day. But the one thing that it's done is gotten awareness all over Hawaii, and the press there, especially the Hawaii Reporter, has really published every day another case history or another report, so the Hawaiians will, you know how serious the problem is.
Well, at least the Hawaiians will know. The average American is not going to know, because the major media here in the United States, controlled by people in many instances dedicated to population control, are going to do everything they can to block the truth about aspartame from getting out. But certainly, thanks to Betty Martini and a group of dedicated activists, the information's there. We just need you to find it. And, of course, we'll tell you later how to get to Betty's website. She's got a couple of wonderful websites. Understand they're poisoning our children. In fact, there was one study, and I'm sure Betty can tell us about it, where they were testing, I forgot what it was, but they took the children off whatever they were getting and gave them just water flavored with aspartame, and hundreds of children became hyperactive. you know, like hyperactivity disorder, and then they took them off the aspartame and put them on what they were on before, and then they all get better. And, of course, they did it a couple of times, and there was no question what it was about. But we can't let the American people know. Well, we're going to be back here in just a minute. Criminal activity at the highest levels of our government, and nobody's telling it. Well, Betty, why don't you go over that study? Because I thought it was a fascinating study. What was the story?
Actually, that was Dr. Barrett in the Dominican Republic. And there were 360 children, and they were on milk, and they changed them over to aspartame juice. But normally, nobody in their right mind would do a study on children, but it was an accident. He didn't know anything about aspartame. And he called me, and he said, you know, if it was 50% of the children or 60% of the children, but almost 100% of these kids immediately started reacting. They were hyperactive, they, you know, confused, behavioral problems, all the things that we see in schools today. And I said, well, my goodness, you know, you need to get them off of it right away. You know, what are you waiting for? He said, okay, I will. And so it was about 4 or 5 days later that all their symptoms disappeared and they went back to normal. That shows you how easy it is to do a study, even though it was not intended to show the reaction that it has on children. And that's why we had the doctors write the report for schools, which is about 40 pages of different articles from all of the aspartame experts and the FINGO people, the ADD people. We have it on mpwhi.com, and it's all in one document. You can email it to your pediatrician or, you know, to your school or to your PTA, and they've got it all. And it's an incredible work from so many different people showing you how aspartame destroys the brains of our kids. But what you're trying to do is you have to battle with Coca-Cola, you have to battle with Pepsi. It was like in New Zealand where the health minister actually made a voluntary deal with Coca-Cola to remove the regular Coke and just leave the Diet Coke because of obesity, not realizing that aspartame is what caused the epidemic of obesity. And study after study, you may have heard of the one that came out a couple of days ago at from Purdue that showed that artificial sweeteners actually make you gain weight. Sharon Fowler, the University of Texas, did one in 2005 with 8 years of data linking diet drinks to obesity. It's just a constant thing about all these studies, and shows what the obesity is. And this was even in grammar school, and they're still working in New Zealand to try to get those diet drinks out of all those schools. And they're doing this in other places. I think one of the worst cases was in Yorkshire, where a 16-year-old, they took out everything but diet drinks, and he didn't like it to begin with, but he started drinking, and because of the free methyl alcohol, he began slurring his words and acting weird, you know, from this psycho drug. So the police picked him up and wanted to know who his drug dealer was, and they were sure he was on crystal meth. And then his parents ripped through his room and made him sleep on the floor in their bedroom so he wouldn't get out and get drugs. And the child was just torn apart. And one day he opened the Diet Coke, and the janitor, who had a PKU child, so he knew about aspartame, he says he took him to the headmaster and threw the Diet Coke down on the desk and said, this is what is causing his problem.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Betty Martini. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Betty is telling us about this story about a child that had been drinking a lot of diet drugs, and of course, because there's methyl alcohol in this, and why he began to slur his words, and certainly everybody thought maybe he was on some sort of methamphetamine or speed or some sort of a psychotropic drug. And of course, he was, you know, certainly everything was done to change his life, to get him away from drugs, and he kept insisting he wasn't on drugs. And It wasn't until somebody who worked actually at the school and saw him, you know, actually taking these diet drinks with aspartame in it, actually took him to the principal of the school and said, "This is what's really responsible. He's on these diet drugs. I know because I have a child with PKU problems and phenylketonuria. Well, they've got phenylalanine in this, and phenylalanine, and of course, breaks down into." Formaldehyde and methyl alcohol. Why would you do that to our children when you know what it's going to do to their brains, to their fertility? And believe me, this was all in the scientific literature prior to 1980. They knew this produced pathological obesity. They knew that it limited fertility. They knew that it caused mental problems, and they knew that, of course, it would attract the entire endocrine system. And of course, they knew it was carcinogenic, and yet of course they didn't want to release it. But Donald Rumsfeld wanted to. He was president of J.D. Searle, and he was going to make a lot of money. And so he used his political power in the Reagan administration to get aspartame legalized, and it's been legalized now for 28 years, poisoning our children, thanks to Donald Rumsfeld. Go ahead, Betty.
Mm. Well, in that particular case, Coke paid off very quickly. But they rewarded the janitor by firing him, and so they gave part of the settlement to the janitor, and
Coke actually made a settlement with the family?
Yes, very, very fast, because it was just very obvious. I'm just hoping the Liverpool high school, you know, turned around and took the Diet Coke out.
So basically, now has anybody else tried to sue Coca-Cola or Pepsi or any of the others for using this or Wrigley's? Why can't you sue
absolutely.
Them for poisoning
the
children?
Of course. In fact, Coke and Pepsi were sued in 2004, and they got out of it. And most of the time, these kind of cases are settled, because I've heard from people over the years tell me that they have, but you never see it in the news. And any time a case is settled, they don't want it to get out. You know, and interestingly, this summer I was interviewed by Atlanta Magazine right here in the home of Coca-Cola, and when the reporter went to Coke and said, "Well, aren't you going to answer Betty Martini?" And they said, "No, we'll let scientific peer-reviewed research answer her." And of course, Dr. Walton did the research of scientific peer-reviewed studies and funding for 60 Minutes, showing 92% of all independent studies show the problems. And in the last, I would say, 24 months, there's been about 17 new studies showing the toxicity of aspartame. And the FDA, of course, just ignores it all.
Well, of course, but they have their own agenda, and that's really what the American people must understand. They know that they're destroying the minds and the hearts and the souls of our children. They know that this is decreases fertility. But then if you think there are too many people in the world, why, then you could justify doing something like this. And if you really have no human compassion, why, there's nothing wrong with what they're doing. After all, they're making excellent profits. Now, certainly you try to get this enacted, laws passed in New Mexico, to try to ban aspartame and aspartame products in New Mexico. What happened there, Betty?
Well, in New Mexico, I mean, it was quite a thing. That did get a lot of awareness out in New Mexico because they wrote about it. But the problem was that the Capitol was literally saturated with lobbyists that told tales faster than Walt Disney. I mean, had nothing to do with reality. But to make it even more difficult, you know, they know they've got the population hooked, and here I am testifying to the House and to the Senate with Dr. Stoler, and he looks around at all these senators sitting there sipping Diet Coke in front of us that were addicted and said, you know, how are we going to get anything done here when you're sitting here drinking the toxin?
And, of course, the thing is that it is addictive, and you try to get off of these things right away, you're going to get into real problems. Isn't that true, Betty?
Yes. In fact, there's one case that my neurologist told me about where they had to put a man in a mental hospital to get him off.
And this is a highly addictive type of drink. You get addicted to this sort of thing, you get high from it, and but we're not telling our kids, and we're not telling our diabetics. We're giving this so they don't have to eat that terrible sugar. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Betty Martini, and welcome your calls. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Betty Martini. Go right ahead, Betty. Well, what happened then? Did they vote this down in New Mexico? Did you get it certainly before the various committees? And what are the
well, first of all, you know, they really had made deals, obviously, because there, for instance, in the Senate, there was a Dr. Comadina, and he was known for knowing all about aspartame and very faithfully warned all of his pregnant women off of it. He's an obstetrician. And I thought, well, you know, that's wonderful that he does that. And here he is, a senator, so I would take the time to send him a booklet that holds about 50 reports, send it Federal Express, so he would know outside of obstetrics all the different things that it does. And when I walked up to him, outside of the room that they were having the committee meeting in, and said, Dr. Comadini, did you get my package? He says, well, I get a lot of email. And I said, well, this was not an email. This was mail. Well, I don't read all my mail. I said, Dr. Comadini, this was sent to you Federal Express, and I believe that you got it. He said, okay, well, I got it. And I turned to Stephen Fox, and I said, he's going to kill the bill. In other words, he didn't want to admit that he knew this much about aspartame, and so that's the first thing that he did was vote to table it, and he was sitting around a bunch of other senators drinking Diet Coke, and that's what happened in the Senate. And in the House, a chemist tabled it, and he didn't even understand about phenylalanine. I went so far as to hand him Dr. Wortman's book about phenylalanine and brain function, and told him as an isolate, he was a chemist, and he kept thinking, well, these are the building blocks of life. And I explained to him there's certain amino acids that you cannot isolate. They become like cytotoxic or neurotoxic, and that, you know, this is bound by methanol. It's a different thing. And no matter how much you explained it and how much you showed it to him in a medical text, he tabled the bill. But this was all intended with the lobbyist standing there, you know, just lying about every detail.
Well, don't you think that they paid these lawyers, these legislators off? Don't you think that the lobbyists hand out a lot of money?
Well, yes. I tell you, one of the things that happened, one senator I was really worried about who was using it because she's diabetic and it could cause so many complications. So I sent her a Federal Express package, too, all the information on what aspartame does to NutraSweet and Equal does to the diabetic. And she
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And of course, before we go on, Betty, I do want you to get your website out there or your websites out there so people will know how to get the information and how to verify what you're saying, which I know is true. They're poisoning our children. But how can people get to your website?
Well, they can go to www.mpwhi.com, and to remember it, so it'll be easier, Mission Possible World Health International, by the letters. The second one is doorway.com, and just remember there's only one O in the door, DORWAY.com. And the third one is WNHO.net. And there's also the Aspartame Toxicity Center, but they're linked so that you can go from one to the other. We have AspartameKills.com, so that many of the Mission Possible operations have their own websites, and we also have an aspartame information list, so that there's a banner on the first page of MPWHI, and you can subscribe, and if you're a victim, we'll give you Dr. Blaylock's detox program, and answer all your questions and help you through withdrawal. And now there's an center in North Carolina called Essence that now is taking the aspartame addiction patients that simply can't get off of it. So we have a lot of help in helping the victims.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Joan, who's calling from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and she's got a question about fluoride. Joan, we're really not getting too much into fluoride tonight, but do you have a quick question on it?
Yes, this is really quick. I really like Martini is saying. It's very interesting. I know some about it, but this is she extends on it a little more than I ever knew. But I just was taken aback when you said they're fumigating wheat with fluoride.
Yes, they're using it, and you can go to fluoridealert.org, fluoridealert.org. Dr. Paul Conant is a chemist who gave up his professorship to fight this battle, and we've had him on a number of times. Yes, they're fumigating your wheat, at least wheat, with this, and the residual that's left over there then after they've fumigated it is equivalent to what you have in your toothpaste, but they tell you that what's in the toothpaste is a deadly poison, but it's all right, it's in your wheat and in your bread. We live in a world gone mad, Joan.
Yes.
When you understand that, everything makes sense. And if you'd like to get those interviews with Dr. Conant, we can make them available. But go to fluoridealert.org, and an excellent source of information, just as doorway.com is an excellent source of information for aspartame.
Okay, and could we avoid that with using organic wheat?
Well, you'd have to be sure it wasn't fumigated. That's the thing.
Oh.
And I think that most of the wheat now you're going to get will be fumigated this way, and Dr. Conant's objected to it. But you see, when there really are people who believe in population control, they're going to go ahead and do it no matter what, unless the American people demand these people be cited for criminal negligence,
right,
and they're sent to the hoosegow where they belong. Okay?
Right. Thank you, Dr.
God bless.
Thank
and again, bye-bye. And, of course, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and then, of course, our guest is Benny Martini. But right now we have Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, just a question. In the case of people who are addicted to those diet drinks and drinking large quantities every day, how do you go about getting them off? What would be a procedure for ending the addiction?
Well, first of all, in Dr. Blaylock's detox program, he says the first thing to do is start taking magnesium every day because it protects the heart and the brain from excitotoxins. And then he says that you have to use a lot of distilled water to flush out the body. And sometimes you have to take it day by day. In other words, you've got to maybe replace it with something that you're able to drink that you might like, and as long as you know it doesn't have any additives in it, maybe white tea if you want to use some of that, and if you can't go cold turkey, you just start cutting down until you can get off. And I can email you the program that he has, and he tells you what to avoid, that you have to read labels. Make sure you don't use any MSG, which has a synergistic and additive effect. And you'll start feeling better. Magnesium actually seems to help people get rid of their headaches, and that are number one on the FDA list. And then we have on the list hundreds of other victims, and they'll all give you good advice. They're very good on telling you how they got off of it. That's why I say you can subscribe to the aspartame information list on mpwhi.com.
MPWHI, is that right?
Yeah, Mission Possible World Health International.
Okay,
fine. MPWHI.com.
Okay, anything else, Mike?
Great, thanks a lot.
Okay, fine. Well, let's go here to Jack. Jack, calling from Michigan. Jack, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan. In fact, two questions, if I may, interrelated. Donald NutraSweet Rumsfeld, as I understand it, was instrumental in blocking attempts to have NutraSweet banned, but also he must have been involved in the chemical process, because usually there's legal counsel involved that somehow veils or protects the entire process.
Well, let Betty tell you how Donald Rumsfeld.
And Stan does sell Sweet Misery, and I recommend it because there's a clip of how it got approved by Rumsfeld. It says Meet Donald Rumsfeld. It's on Google, and you can see it and get the movie. But what James Turner attorney says is that first the FDA tried to have the manufacturer indicted for fraud, and both U.S. prosecutors hired on with the defense team, and the statute of limitations expired. Then the FDA actually revoked the petition for approval, and we have the whole 50-page report on web. And then the day afterwards, Searle actually filed suit against the FDA, and the FDA said, no way. And Don Rumsfeld said, I'll call in my markers, and I'll get it on the market anyway. And he was on President Reagan's transition team. And this all sounds like the Twilight Zone. It's an unbelievable story. But Jerry Goyen was the FDA commissioner, and I actually have on web a letter from his wife who was with him when the transition team called him at 3 o'clock in the morning and told him to resign. And the day after Reagan took office, he appointed Dr. Arthur Hull Hayes to overrule the Board of Inquiry and to be FDA commissioner. But he knew it would take 30 days to get to the FDA. So what he did was he wrote an executive order making the FDA powerless to do anything about aspartame until they could get Hayes there. And when Hayes got there, he overruled the Board of Inquiry, then went to work amid allegations he was flying around on General Foods jet and such, and went to work for the PR agency of the manufacturer, Burson Marsteller, at $1,000 a day on a 10-year contract.
That's pretty good pay for just betraying and killing millions of Americans.
Yeah, he didn't even have to go to the office. He just had to send postcards home from Bermuda for $365,000 a year.
Right, and for 10 years. That's pretty good payment. This is how That's things right. really work, Jack. Unfortunately, $5 and we'll buy a cup of coffee at any and the integrity of our government officials. $5 and the integrity of government officials will buy a cup of coffee at Starbucks any day. Go ahead. Anything else you want to ask?
Dr. Stan, what documentary is this addressed on?
I guess it's on Sweet Misery, which we carry. It's a DVD.
It's wonderful. It has the world experts. It even goes to a prison where a man actually died from aspartame, and they put his wife in prison for 20 and 30 years, even after she took 3 lie detector tests, because they're dropping dead from aspartame, and he died from the methadone toxicity.
That's the thing. You see, this fellow died of methadone, but they had to cover it up, so they sent his wife to prison, saying she had poisoned him, and it was actually the aspartame he was drinking, but we couldn't allow the public to know that, so they send innocent people to prison. Do you realize today we have over 7 million Americans in prison, probation, and parole, and an awful lot of them are innocent? That's the tragedy. Anything else before we let you go?
Dr. Stan, this harkens, I know this is a little off point, but remember Rodney Stitch and how he blew the whistle and they put him in prison, didn't they?
Amen, they sure did. And we carry his books, Defrauding America and Drugging America, and Unfriendly Skies, all by Rodney Stitz. Vitally important if you want to understand the degree of corruption at the highest level of our government today. I love our country. I want we have a good country, a moral country, but unfortunately we have corrupt people in positions of power, and until we return, of course, to our fundamentals of morality and fear of God, the same thing's going to go on.
The last thing, Dr. Stan, is the only thing necessary for evil to flourish is for good people to do nothing.
Amen. God bless. Thanks so much, Jack. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and all that's necessary for evil to triumph is that good people do nothing, said Edmund Burke. And it's one of those great truisms. The price that good people pay for their apathy and indifference to public affairs ruled by evil men. Go ahead, Betty.
You know, he mentioned Harkins, and he's from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I think Don Harkins is up there. He works with a lot of the prison people that are in there being innocent, like Diane Fleming. And they put out the artificially sweetened Tams, which people can get for distribution to their friends and family to warn them. They're 24-page booklets, and we give them out all the time wherever we go, so that, you know, they will, your friends and family and acquaintances simply won't use it accidentally because they don't know. So Don Harkins is doing a great job in getting the word out.
How can people get a copy of that publication
you're talking about? It's www.idaho-observer.com.
Idahoobserver.com. They're great. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
you can
always go up on the Internet and Google in Betty Martini's name or aspartame. There are literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of papers on this subject. And yet, of course, you're not going to hear this discussed. Now, has this been on 60 Minutes at all? Have they been able to get this on 60 Minutes or 2020?
It was on 60 Minutes in 1996 with Dr. John Oney. You know, that's when he had a report in neurology about how it increases, actually triggers brain tumors. That's one of the reasons that they revoked the petition for approval. Number one, it couldn't be proven safe. And number two, it produced brain tumors.
In animals. And, of course, they know this. But they don't care. I mean, back in, you know, beginning of the last century, one person in 33 developed cancer. Today it's one person in two. And they say, well, we have no idea why it is, but we can assure you it's not aspartame or mercury or fluoride or genetically modified food or any of the other things we keep talking about here. But we have no idea why it is. But isn't it interesting that the Amish don't have any of the problems, these problems? They're healthy because they don't take the use the artificial, the flavored things. They don't give their child vaccines.
I mean, well, it's interesting that, you know, that both FDA toxicologists testified before Congress against their own FDA. In fact, Dr. Jacqueline Barrett wrote a book. It's actually out of print as a few used copies, and against the FDA, called Eating May Be Hazardous to Your Health, The Case Against Additives. But Dr. Adrian Gross told Congress that aspartame violated the Delaney Amendment because without a shadow of a doubt, it can cause brain tumors and brain cancer, and ended by saying that, you know, that you shouldn't even be allowed to give an allowable daily dose. And if the FDA violates its own law, what's left to, who's left to protect the public? And Dr. Barrett testified in 87, and she said that to this day it hadn't been proven safe and had been on the market since 1981. And she just said that it was an absolute disaster, that the studies were so bad. That's the reason they wanted them indicted. You simply can't take a chemical poison and get it to show safety.
Well, of course, the thing is, Betty, that they hold so many of these congressional committee hearings simply to give the people the idea they're doing something, but if it's really significant, like they're poisoning the public, why, of course, they will totally suppress it. You'll never see it covered in television. If it's something that is of no consequence at all, like Roger Clemens, or whether he used, enhancement, increasing medications, testosterone, growth hormone, why, of course, that's on the front pages of our newspapers. It's covered on television and radio. But the really important congressional hearings, and, you know, I know time and time again why we've had these hearings, and they're totally buried by the controlled media until people understand that they control what we get. There is total control over the dissemination of information in America, and if it weren't for the Internet and alternative radio and crusaders like Betty Martini, who just refuse to give in, why, of course, they would get away with what they're doing. I just hope one day these people have to stand before the bar of justice, and Donald Rumsfeld will either stand before the bar of justice in this life or in the next life, and I really pity him. I really do. Well, Betty, Sydney, are we making any progress? Do you think more and more people are beginning to understand? Are we hurting the sales for Wrigley and the others who are poisoning our children with their Wrigley's gums?
Well, absolutely, because you know about exponentiation, and everybody, you know, is telling everybody else, and as I said, we have operations in 38 nations, And one thing that does make news is when a state or a country is trying to ban it, and they tried to hush up the news in New Zealand so bad that the New Zealand Food Safety Authority, who was putting out Ajinomoto's propaganda, was actually putting out press releases. Don't listen to them. And, you know, people were saying, well, we got off of it and got well, but don't listen to them. So, you know, that's what we had to put up with, but they could not stop the news from getting out. They saw it on TV, and people, you know, one after the other were getting off of it and waking up well. So we're definitely making progress throughout the world. There's several countries that will do anything to, you know, to get it out of their country. And I was told the other day by a lady, she says, we got rid of it in Romania in the early 90s because of the cancer. So I guess in a dictatorship, when they say it goes, it goes.
Of course, this isn't just cancer of the brain. What other types of cancers does it produce, Betty?
Well, it produced pancreatic and mammary, uterine, ovarian, testicular. It, just like Dr. Sofridi said, it's a multipotential carcinogen, and his study showed leukemia and lymphoma, cancer of the kidney and the peripheral nerves, especially the cranial.
And ladies and gentlemen, you're out there, our guest is Betty Martini. You've got to get to the bottom of it. You've got to find out if it's true and then help us spread the word if you really care about your children. Well, Betty, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program here.
Okay, well, I hope that everybody will help. And if you're listening and you happen to be in Hawaii, if you will call the Senate committee that's headed by Senator Ige, spelled I-G-E, and ask that he schedule a meeting, his committee meeting, to ban aspartame, we maybe can get it out of Hawaii this year. Otherwise, we hope everybody will get on the website and get all the information. There's reports on just about every subject there is, and warn everybody that you know, save a life today, get it to the schools, become proactive so that we can, this generation of children has been damaged and we have to put an end to it, and everybody that gets involved, you know, can help save a life today.
And really, we've got a very, very real problem. There are wicked people at the highest levels of the government, wicked people like Donald Rumsfeld. Of course, he used the government to get this through when he was the president of J.D. Searle, and he made millions of dollars out of this. But he really doesn't care anymore than he cares about sending our boys over to fight and bleed and suffer and die in Iraq, but not be allowed to win the war. And we're not trying to win the war over there. You have to understand that. They have a different agenda because these people have a different worldview. Well, Betty Martini's been on the front lines of this battle for so long. How long have you been at it now, Betty?
Now, 17 years.
17 years. And do you ever get discouraged and say, maybe I should have taken my husband up on it and going traveling instead of getting into this battle?
Well, you know, my husband is a minister. We're witnesses. And he says, well, you can't have this kind of knowledge and not share it, you know, with the people. Otherwise, they'll die. And if we stop, you know, that's what would happen. So we just have to do this. And believe me, I do it 7 days a week around the clock, sometimes working through the night. And he's a great man because he cares so much about humanity and helps a great deal himself and has put himself out to give up all his retirement funds to do this just to save lives. And, of course, you know, it has saved thousands and thousands of lives.
Well, I every time I call Betty, why, of course, she answers the phone usually, and I just asked her on very, very short notice. Our regularly scheduled guest had the flu. He was over in the Near East and wasn't able to come on. And I called Betty earlier in the day and said, Betty, can you come and help me? And there was never even a hesitation. Of course I can. She's already did another program 2 hours ago and then did this one, and she'll be working again tomorrow. I hope you'll join her and join Radio Liberty in this effort to bring the truth to the American people. God bless you, Betty. Thanks so very much.
And thank you, Sam.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you appreciate Betty Martini. Remember her website, Doorway. That's DORWAY, only one O, doorway.com. And then, of course, you can link to her other websites. We carry actually a four-tape set on aspartame. We carry Dr. Blaylock's excellent book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, going into aspartame and MSG, both of which are certainly excitotoxins, both of which, of course, produce pathological obesity, infertility, cancer, and a whole host of problems. And they know this. They just don't want you and your family to know it. So if you really care, get the information, and it's available through Radio Liberty. We have actually two DVDs. One's called Sweet Misery. The other is called Sweet Remedy. Sweet Misery, Sweet Memory. Pardon me, Sweet Misery, Sweet Remedy. And if you're only going to get one, get Sweet Remedy. I like that one the best, but they're both excellent. And then, of course, we certainly have a lot of individual tapes, my interviews with Betty through the years. You need to get on the front line of this battle and understand they're doing the same thing with fluoride. We have a talk I've given called The Hidden Agenda, and you'll actually then get the syllabus with that. And if you get the syllabus, you'll read the pages from Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society, where he says on page 53, I think it is, but you'll actually see the pages. We got permission to put them in the syllabus. Diet, injections, and injunctions will be used, so alter the mind of the children. They will never be able to think differently than the schoolmaster taught them. Diet, injections, and injunctions will be used. What was he talking about? Well, he was talking about things like, well, of course, the fluoride we put in the water, and that's in the diet, and then the mercury that we give through injections, and certainly the aspartame. They've been planning a long time. I mean, Bertrand Russell was a very wicked and evil man who talked about how great it was we could have wars to delimit the population and, of course, great plagues to limit the population. He thought plagues were really a far better way to kill off large numbers of people than wars. Although wars were effective, they weren't as good as plagues. And if we had just one every generation, why, of course, we wouldn't have so many people. We wouldn't have so many problems. That's on pages 103 and 104, and you can read them in my syllabus on The Hidden Agenda, and, of course, my talk on fluoride. I think it's as good as any information you're going to get. And then, of course, we have information on mercury and of course, Alzheimer's disease, directly related to mercury, also related to aluminum and other heavy metals. And we're putting together a four-tape set on Alzheimer's disease, which should be available in the very near future. You could always order it. We'll get it to you when it's available. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. How do you understand this? Because it's so foreign to the way most people feel. Well, you need, of course, to see the pages from the UNESCO Courier, November 1991, where Jacques Cousteau, that great humanitarian who swam with the dolphins, talked about the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day. If you'd like those pages, we'll be glad to send it to you. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. HIV war, because America is under attack today. And then, of course, you need to get my talk on, it's on DVD, None Care Call It Genocide. None Dare Call It Genocide. My talk on the planned population reduction. My talk on population control. You need to read my monograph, the Population Control Agenda monograph. It's up on our webpage at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Or certainly, if you want to get a hard copy of it, why, we'll send you one. If you get any of the other items, we hope that you'll call us at 1-800-544-8927 and inquire about these items for suggested gifts. We need to get the information out. And then please pray for America. Revival, pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. We're involved in a spiritual battle, and there really are evil people out there who want to kill off large numbers of people in the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And for this hour, we're going to have with us again Lynn Marzulli, and he's written a wonderful book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, because he's captured in the pages of that book much of what we talk about. Most people like to look at what's going on from an ideological point of view. Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, right, left, but that's really not what it's all about. We're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a cultural, ideological, and political battlefield, but the real battle is a spiritual battle, and of course Lynn brings this out beautifully in his book. And then of course we really need to understand that there is a supernatural dimension, and certainly Lynn brings this out beautifully in his book. And Lynn, thanks so very much for being with us this evening.
Thanks for having me on, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit, of course, in your book you talk about how a Christian really has to believe in the supernatural, because there's so much in the New Testament that already manifests as supernatural. Want to pick up that idea?
Sure, I'd love to. If we really look at what we believe in, certainly in this country, we believe in Christmas and Easter. We celebrate those two. Christmas, obviously, a national holiday. Easter, several months later, this year it comes early, but several months later we celebrate the resurrection. So we've got the virgin birth of Christmas and the resurrection of the God-man Jesus, Yeshua. And these are supernatural events, really, to the nines. The problem is we've traveled in these things, most of us from birth, born in this country and raised in this country. And so it becomes, we kind of desensitized ourselves, if I can use that word, to the things of the spirit, to the things of the supernatural. When Jesus walked the earth, for instance, one of my favorite stories from the Gospels, when Peter goes, "Hey, we gotta pay our taxes," I'm paraphrasing here, and Jesus goes, "Well, go down and the first fish you catch, open its mouth and you'll see two gold coins. Take one for you, one for me, and pay our taxes." If it was only that easy today. The bottom line is, I mean, and I truly believe in the literal interpretation of that story. I don't believe it's a nice little fable, or, you know, it's a bedtime story. I think Jesus did that, and Peter went down and caught the fish, and lo and behold, in the fish's mouth were two gold coins. And that's the kind of stuff. When Jesus was here, he traveled everywhere he went. He traveled in the supernatural. He manifested the supernatural. Most, if you throw out the supernatural in the New Testament, you're left with very little. For instance, 10 lepers come to see him, and leprosy in the ancient world was completely incurable. It was a death sentence, which is why lepers in the ancient world would keep their distance and have to shout or yell or whatever, unclean, unclean, as they would travel through, so people would stay away from them, because leprosy was the most feared disease in the ancient world. No cure. And yet 10 lepers come to him, and Jesus heals them. So, you know, we read these passages in Scripture, and many of us just kind of gloss over them. Well, that was for them. The supernatural really doesn't manifest now. God doesn't heal now. Miracles don't happen today. The supernatural isn't manifesting, you know, in today's world. And yet, I beg to differ, it is, and it's all around us.
Amen to that. And I think it's really, it's so important that if you stop and think about it, I mean, what could be more supernatural than a virgin birth? I mean, a virgin giving a birth to a son. And of course, what could be more supernatural than being crucified and buried and then being resurrected and coming back to life? Mm. We read the stories in the Bible about the disciples are scared to death. They're in this locked room. There's no way to get into the room. And suddenly Jesus appears there. How could he do that? The door is locked. The supernatural is real, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, we don't talk about it in churches today. And we really need to, because we need to understand this relationship between politics and prophecy and the supernatural. Well, Lynn, go ahead and pick the story up from there. Certainly, I think you've done a great job. But how did you get involved with this idea of trying to put all of these things together into one book?
Well, it kind of evolved. I've been working with specifically passages in Genesis with the Nephilim and the first incursion of that, and then of course from there going into the prophetic, and over the probably the last 25 years is where all this it began to just kind of form. And after I wrote the Nephilim trilogy for Zondervan, I realized that there were many people out there who looked at this stuff and or looked at my writing, let's say, and wouldn't get near it because it was a fictional work. The trilogy is a fictional work. And so I decided to take some of the research and expound on that, and came up with Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. There is a chapter that gets into the whole Genesis 6, the Nephilim, and that first incursion, of course, the second incursion where David and Goliath and all that. But what really intrigued me was the idea that the current political landscape, what we see is actually setting a stage for the, which I believe, the fulfillment of prophetic statements, utterances, 2,500-year-old prophetic statements that are found in Scripture. And I think our current political scene is setting that stage for some of those prophecies to actually be fulfilled real time, and I think we're looking at it, you know, fairly soon. And I believe that the triggering or the fulfillment of these prophecies will then trigger the supernatural. We'll start to see the supernatural manifest, very much like what says in 2 Thessalonians, that Satan comes with all signs and lying wonders. And I think the church is, unfortunately, very asleep on this one point. That we read this stuff because most of us have read it from a time, you know, we're in Sunday school. And so we become desensitized to what the Scripture is really telling us. Jesus himself warns that if it were possible, even the elect would be deceived. Men will faint from fear of what is coming on the earth. Going back to 2 Thessalonians, Satan comes with all signs and lying wonders. And when you start to put all these Scriptures together, all these prophecies together, not only from Jesus, but from Paul in 2 Thessalonians and elsewhere, I began to realize that, you know, I believe we're in this time of the end that the Bible speaks of. I think the prophecies are being fulfilled, specifically that the nation of Israel, after 2,000 years of diaspora, is now regathered in its ancient homeland, which certainly, I mean, that's got to be a wake-up call for even the most hard-headed skeptic, that you've got this nation literally fulfilling prophecy of Ezekiel 37, saying, I will gather you in the end days, latter days, end times, from all the nations of the earth and reestablish you back in your ancient homeland.
Hold Israel. That thought. We'll be right back with Lynn Marzullian. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Lynn Marzullian. Of course, we're talking about the ancient prophecies. And, you know, of course, one of the most striking prophecies is the fact that the Jews have returned to the Holy Land. Now, a lot of people say, well, a lot of them they really don't believe in the prophecies. They don't believe in the God of the Old Testament, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And that's absolutely true. I believe that's absolutely so. But that doesn't detract from the fact that for some reason, at this time in history, they're back there. And, of course, as you read the prophecies, they talk about the things that will happen in the latter days, that you'll neither be able to buy nor sell, lest you be known by the number of your name, or wear the mark of the beast, or be known by the number of your name. Well, how would you ever, you know, 2,000 years ago, been able to number people and restrict their buying and selling unless they had this number? I mean, would have been illogical 2,000 years ago. It would have been illogical 50 years ago, mm-hmm. but it's not illogical today. Well, let's talk a little bit about the supernatural, because you have actually talked to one of the people who witnessed this recent sighting of this mile-long vehicle. Where was that? Was that in Texas someplace?
It was a place called Stephensville, Texas, and it happened a little over a month ago. Interestingly enough, Dr. Stan, and this is very fortuitous for our interview tonight, I spoke with the witness again today.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm not trying to sell books here. I'm just reporting to you exactly what happened. First of all, his phone is tapped. There was a series of ongoing clicks throughout the entire conversation. About every 20, 30, 40 seconds, somewhere in there, you hear click. And I've been on the phone a lot and done a lot of interviews with a lot of people, and I've only heard those clicks one other time. And he just told me, the witness told me point blank, that he believed his phone was tapped, people were listening, He's had black unmarked helicopters fly over his house at 2:30 in the morning. It wasn't an interview. It was just more of an update. He's been looking. I sent him a copy of my book, overnighted him a copy of my book over a month ago. He never received it. He told me today that his mail is being, he's not getting all of his mail. So he gave me another address, and once again we sent out another book to him, you know, to read this thing, and he'll probably get it by the end of the week, and then we'll touch base next week. He mentioned a lot of interesting things to me, and of course this is, I have no way of verifying what he's saying. So as a journalist, you know, there's just some basic rules. It's all, you know, it's basically alleged. I can't prove it one way or the other. He says he's seen the craft on several occasions, and other people now have seen it with him. And apparently this thing keeps materializing in the area. And I asked him to try an experiment if he saw it again. And this man's a born-again Christian. And I said, the next time you see the craft, if you see it, why don't you say the blood of Jesus? And, I mean, say it out loud and rebuke it and say the blood of Jesus and just see what happens. See if you get kind of any kind of a reaction to this thing. So we're going to try a supernatural, you know, weapons of the spirit here, 101, if in fact this thing manifests to him again.
How does he describe this? How long ago? Was it about a month ago he saw
it? About a month ago. He told me today that the first time he's saying that the first time he saw this thing, that the lights absolutely dazzled him. I mean, just the appearance of the craft in all its majesty and all its glory was absolutely overwhelming, and it dazzled him. It literally the word he used several times was overwhelming. He's never seen anything like it. I mean, it was like the lights are just amazing. That's a direct quote from him. And, you know, he's still trying to get his head around it, trying to figure out how to deal with it. He is being pressured not to talk about it.
Did he tell you who is pressuring him? Because I think that's so important.
Basically the government.
Why would the government pressure him? But, of course, we know that they've always pressured people because they don't want the truth to come out, that
that's
these
right.
entities are real. And then why would they try to conceal it from the American people?
It's amazing because he asked me exactly the same question. He said, Lynn, why would the government, why are they trying to bury this thing? And I told him, my answer to him was basically what the same answer is to you, is that when this thing manifests, if this thing ever gets out, if they actually do full disclosure or revealing, as I like to put it, and it is something so earth-shattering that people's worldview will be challenged and changed basically in a twinkling of an eye. You get 20 or 30 mile-wide crafts over the major cities of this earth, and CNN and Fox News and everybody else has cameras trained on these babies, kind of like Independence Day, and it makes you wonder, you know, what wag the dog type thing, what comes first. But it's interesting. It's like he's having trouble, you know, figuring out, what am I really looking at? Is this satanic? Is it... What is this thing, you know? And in my opinion, and again, this is just my opinion, but it's based on 20, 25 years of research, what is manifesting now in the supernatural realm are over 10,000 sightings per year of UFOs. And I believe that this is the coming great deception that the Bible warns us against. Jesus himself says, for men fainting for fear of things coming on the earth, that the elect would be deceived. How the heck are you going to get 1.2 billion Muslims and 1.7 billion Christians to drop their worldview? And Thessalonians, it talks about this great falling away, which precedes the Antichrist. And the Greek word, of course, is our word, apostasy. And it's a willful walking away from the truth. And what fits the scenario? What's manifesting now? What is constantly happening in the skies, 10,000 a year? And what world event would literally be earth-shaking enough to sway the worldview of 1.2 billion Muslims and 1.7 billion Christians on this planet to create a one-world government and a one-world religious system, in my opinion, that is the revealing of the extraterrestrial presence, which, of course, you and I believe is nothing more than a demonic ruse.
And, of course, the thing is that the government is doing everything they can to say, oh, they don't exist. And then when you begin to investigate, why, you find out that they're aliens, that they've had agreements with these aliens over a long period of time. That was the whole thrust of the X-File program that they had. And it was really very, very convincing that there really were these critters from the other galaxies or certainly other places out in space. Mm-hmm. But that isn't what it is at all. These are manifestations of the supernatural. These are manifestations of the other dimension. And the government is actually working in conjunction. They are doing everything they can to contact these supernatural forces from the other dimension to harness them, for astral travel and really the power that is there, and use that power to pursue their goal. And what is their goal? Their goal is a one-world government, the destruction of Christianity and a one-world religion, and then the coming one-world leader. But they can't tell the American people, so they have to get us confused about what these craft are. Well, tell us, how did this fellow describe the craft when he first saw it, and what was he doing? How did he happen to see it the first time?
Apparently, from what I understand, and I haven't really gone into an in-depth interview with him, I'm hoping once he gets the book and he reads it, he'll really sit down with me, or I may even fly down there and do a one-on-one with him, because I think it's worth it. It's a sighting like this. But apparently, from what I gather, he has a fairly large piece of property, and he's back in one of his pastures, and he looks up, and there this thing is. And it's like, he estimates it to be about a mile long, and in my first interview with him, he talked about that he just sat there and stared at it and tried to figure out what was making it work, how it was pieced together, what was it made of, what made the thing tick. He was looking at the structure of the thing and was just blown away by it, just absolutely amazed and bowled over by what he was seeing. It was noiseless, didn't make any sound, and he wasn't afraid. Interestingly enough, he wasn't afraid. But now that he's seen the same type of craft, the same craft, I believe, several more times since then, and of course this begs the question, why is this thing appearing to this guy, and why there? And he kind of shared with me today on the phone that the first time it was just he alone saw it, and then later on that same day, other people in another area saw these huge lights in the sky. And of course, this was reported by Larry King had the pilot on who saw this, plus the other witnesses. He did a whole show, like a 1-hour show, on the particular sighting. The witness I talked to was not on Larry King. So there's like this witness I spoke to saw it, and then maybe later on in that evening or whatever, these other witnesses saw it. That's what I've been able to piece together. So it's very strange. It seems to be ongoing, and now other people have seen this thing. He said he actually had some very bad video film of it from the first time on his cell phone. So it'd be interesting to see what that looks like.
Well, basically then, the government agencies contact him, and what government agencies did contact him? Does he know?
He doesn't know. He only knows that he's being pressured. He's mentioned several times that he's had phone calls telling him to back off on his story, just kind of telling him, it's time to just, you didn't see anything. And the same type of nonsense that they used in Roswell. You didn't see anything, and you just need to be quiet and that type of thing. But he's not, at least as far as I know, he's not backing down. One thing we did is we prayed before we got off the phone, and I prayed for the safety of his family. And I said, you need to, talking to the witness, I said, you need to take a spiritual authority over your family, over each person, in your household. You need to pray the blood of Jesus over your house, over your wife, your children, yourself. Every single day. I mean, you're on the front lines here, pal, and you need some help. I mean, you need supernatural weapons, not carnal weapons.
And of course, there are other people, of course, who understand what this is about, have been encountered with these UFOs, and they've called it the blood of Jesus and demanded that they leave immediately. And usually,
right,
voila, they're gone. People, Christians, don't understand the power that they really have if they truly are children of God. And the fact that they're sending black helicopters down, certainly we know a number of people have come under this. It's a method of intimidation, and they'll have them hover right over your house, with those mm-hmm. machine guns sticking out the window. Oh. It's all part of the government program. Why? Because they know they're real. They know the supernatural is real, too. And of course, there is only a small component of people within government who are really involved at the upper echelons. But, of course, they want to use the supernatural power to fulfill the age-old plan, the one-world government, the one world religion.
That's where it's headed.
The one world leader. We'll be right back. Well, then, go ahead. So do you think you'll go down and actually talk to this gentleman?
I really want to. If he gets the book and he reads it and he opens up a dialogue on the phone, I may take some time off and fly down. I think it's worth it. That way I can see face-to-face, look at the body language, just all the little things, you know, that you pick up on that you can't see over the phone when you're interviewing someone. You know, are they nervous? Are they looking away? Are they changing the story? Are they fidgeting? Are they looking down? Is he honest? Does he look me in the eye? All those little nuances that, you know, lend themselves to credibility are lost on a phone. I like his voice on the phone. He seems very earnest and just... he seems like a man without guile and an agenda. He just seems real down home, and I mean that in a real positive way. He's just a real down home kind of guy. I mean, I don't see any, you know, manipulation or weird stuff with him that way at all. So we'll see how it plays out. You know, definitely.
And I think that really there have been so many manifestations. You said something about 10,000 sightings a year.
There's about 5,000. That are reported. This comes from George Filer. He sends out a weekly newsletter called Filer's Files. It's from MUFON, and he gets reports from all over the country and sometimes the world. But certainly, you know, United States obviously he's based in the U.S., so most of his reports are from the U.S. But he gets things from Australia and England and Europe and pretty much all over the planet. And I asked him, I said, you know, what are we looking at here? And he said, well, it's 5,000 sightings per year that are reported. He believes that at least another 5,000 go unreported. Also, in the closing months of 2007, there was a rise from, let's say, June into August. Like June, I think, had, I'm just guessing at the numbers, but from what my memory serves me, it would be around 300 in June, and then in July it crept up a little more. All of a sudden, in August, it doubled. It was up around 675 or something, UFO sightings, and it was like, you know, what's this? What's going on? And of course, that was the same time when two different pilots and two different aircraft over the English Channel observed what they believed was a 3-mile-wide craft. I mean, that's huge.
A 3-mile-wide.
3-mile-wide craft sighted by two different pilots and two different airplanes over the English Channel. That also got international news. I mean, it was all over the. I think Drudge Report actually reported on it. And it was a lot of guys, depending on what you read, was tongue-in-cheek. Oh, you know, the UFO nonsense, here we go again, little green men, and, you know, just kind of play it down. The bottom line is, excuse me, a 3-mile craft, I mean, that's the mothership. That thing is just huge. Imagine one of those things parked over Los Angeles or Santa Cruz or San Francisco Bay or, I mean, wherever. It's like, I mean, if I'm right, and I don't know whether I am, but I... Based on my research, I believe I am right. I believe it's a very plausible scenario. And certainly 10,000 sightings per year, do the math, that's a lot of sightings every day. This is what's manifesting. And when it really starts to manifest, I think it will cause the great falling away that the Bible speaks of.
Well, I think that, of course, if people really begin to believe that these are alien beings, and, you know, of course, maybe this is where life really came from, and we're subservient to the aliens, or maybe we've got to unite to protect us from those wicked aliens. And believe me, the people who want the world government are quite willing to use our fears. And the last thing they want, of course, people to understand what this is really all about. And that's why I think they sent out the black helicopters and tap telephones and try to intimidate people. We'll be right back with Lynn here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Lynn Marzulli. And, of course, our telephone number, if you'd like to call us, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But Lynn, of course, has fascinating information. And, of course, he's been researching this from the political point of view, from the prophetic point of view. And then, of course, from the supernatural point of view. Lynn, were you aware of the earthquake in Israel this last week? There were, of course, primarily the areas injured were the tomb of Joseph's tomb, and a Temple Mount. Did you see that?
Yeah, I followed that, and some of the pavement stones on top of the Temple Mount seemed like a sinkhole there, and there was definitely some damage from the quake.
About a 5-foot hole opened up on the Temple Mount, and you know, that's not very big, but you know, this could simply suggest that there's going to be a, you know, the whole infrastructure of the Temple Mount is undermined and honeycombed. And if that is really true, you know, of course, the prophecy is that the temple is going to be rebuilt, the Jewish temple, and but then what are you going to do with the Al-Aqsa Mosque unless, well, maybe it's going to disappear into one of these sinkholes one of these times. Did that thought cross your mind?
Well, what I think is going to happen with Al-Aqsa and the Dome of the Rock, I believe that, the Temple Mount is fairly large. It's like 35 acres, so it's large enough really to accommodate the Jewish Third Temple. And what I think they may do is construct a wall between the Dome of the Rock and the Israeli, well, basically the Third Temple, which would kind of fulfill the prophecy. I think it's in Ezekiel 39 where it talks about don't measure the outer court, or Ezekiel 40 rather. Don't measure the outer court because it's been given over to the Gentiles. So that's certainly one way of making it work. I mean, I think if anything happens to Al-Aqsa or the Dome of the Rock, all hell will break loose in the Muslim world. And you remember that prophecy says very specifically that the person who creates or cuts that peace treaty with Israel and allows them to build that temple is none other than the Antichrist. I've got a very, I don't know if we talked about this, but I have a very, he's on the top of my list anyway for the candidate who may actually bring this about. Not that he's the Antichrist now, because it hasn't indwelt him yet. But interestingly enough, there's one person in the Muslim world who could make that happen. Remember, the whole complex, the whole temple complex, the former Temple Mount, is under the command of the Waqf, W-A-Q-F. And the Waqf answers to the King of Jordan. The King of Jordan is a Hashemite king, Hashem being the uncle of Muhammad. The Hashemite king is a direct descendant from Muhammad, so he holds great sway in the Muslim world. The Hashemite king, King Abdullah, is responsible for anything that happens on the Temple Mount. They go directly to him. He has literally the keys, the figurative keys to the Temple Mount. Nothing happens there without his say-so or without his nod of approval. So the only guy who can make the deal in the entire planet, at least that I'm aware of right now, is King Abdullah. He's the guy that could actually, remember, the Antichrist comes in riding on a white horse, and is a peacemaker. And Abdullah, if you watch him on YouTube, they've got several. If you Google YouTube and you get on there and you hit King Abdullah, you'll get a lot of different shots of him in front of the UN and just different speeches that he's giving. And one of the speeches he gives constantly, he brings his listeners back. What are we going to do the day after peace, the first day after peace? And that's what he's talking about. He's not talking about the destruction of Israel. No, he's talking about, what do we do the next day, the day after, when there's peace? How do we interface with one another? How do we make this work? So it's like, you know, is he the Antichrist? I don't know. But he's certainly one person in the entire planet right now who could make that deal, cut that deal with the Israelis, and allow that temple, the new temple, to be built on the ancient Temple Mound that's been there really for 2,000 years, and of course, actually longer than that, but 2,000 years without a temple, and the Dome of the Rock from the year, I think, 900, it was rebuilt, and
About 600 A.D. Mm-hmm. The Dome of the Rock was put in about 600 A.D. I think 690, somewhere in there. Anyway, by, of course, Omar had built it. Anyway, let's go to Peter, who's calling from Salinas. Hi, Peter, did you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I did. I had a comment on the UFOs. I note that the aliens often appear in reptilian form,
right?
Either as a sort of chameleon-like or a snake-like creature. And I would like to remind all of our listeners that Satan is very comfortable in that cold-blooded form, and that anybody that would show any allegiance to that can expect the same kind of treatment that you would get from an alligator or any of the other cold-blooded creatures that have absolute disregard for where our hearts and where our souls belong.
Well, because you know, many of the people have actually talked about the grays, and they all describe pretty much the same creature. And then there are other creatures there. So there are different types of creatures, different manifestations of this evil. Hey, hang on, we'll be right back in just a moment.
Thank you, Dr.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Lynn Marzulli. We've got Peter calling from Salinas. Peter, how are you listening to us? Are you listening to us on the Internet shortwave? Are you listening to us on KFER?
KFER in the local station here. And I try never to miss you, Dr. Stan, as you are, again, one of the voices of truth that we so desperately need in these uncertain times. And Dr. Lynn, thank you for your contributions as well. I have absolutely no faith, no pun intended, that any extraterrestrial has our interest in mind. I don't need any biblical passages to know that their interests lie in, like the fox in the hen house, what's for dinner. But I ask you to please continue on, and I listen with the belief that humanity's strength lies not just in our faith, but in our humanity itself, and not in the lizard people or anybody from yet somewhere else.
Well, because our real power, any influence we have is not ours at all, but is we can call upon the blood of Jesus Christ, and I know I've done this when under demonic oppression, and it is amazing to see how this works. And other people, of course, who are involved with exorcisms and similar things will tell you that exactly the same things. And the mediums who come out of the supernatural and involvement with the supernatural will tell you that you have the ability to you know, to control these demons, to command them, but it's never your power. It's always the power of our Lord.
Amen.
Well, we should always remember it's the light that leads us, not the dark. Thank you, gentlemen.
God bless you, and thanks very much for
thanks,
calling.
Peter.
God
bless you, Dr. Stan and Lynn.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, let's go to Mike, who's calling again from Santa Cruz. Mike, does he have a question or comment? Mike, are you there? No, let's see. Mike, are you there?
Not here.
Okay, do you have a question?
There we go. We're on now, okay?
Right.
All right. I called about the UFOs, but first could I just say about the mosque.
Yes, go ahead.
The Temple of Omar. To your guest, Lynn Marzulli, thanks so much for coming on, by the way.
Sure.
And are you aware of the Masonic fascination with Solomon's Temple?
Absolutely, and it goes back to the Knights Templar during the Crusades.
You're probably aware of their interest in rebuilding that temple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, does that seem to explain a high likelihood of who might be doing the rebuilding?
Well, I know that they're called the Temple Mount Faithful in Israel, and they have actually...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Mike had called in, and I was asking about, the Masons' fascination with Solomon's Temple. And, of course, Mike was wondering if maybe the Masons were going to rebuild it. But certainly there's a group of, you go ahead, Lynn, what you were saying about the Temple Mount Faithful.
The Temple Mount Faithful in Israel, it's a group of rabbis and Jews who are literally every year they try to bring the cornerstone into the old city, which causes a riot. So most of the time they're not allowed to even bring the cornerstone into the city, but they have prepared the menorahs and certain temple instruments are actually already constructed and ready to go. They have been able to find out through DNA the descendants of a Levite priest. These guys are ready to build this thing, and they're ready to build it quick.
Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't necessarily present a conflict in my thoughts.
I don't think that the Masons necessarily are going to build that. I think that basically, the Masons have certainly traced their origin back to the Solomon's Temple and the myth of Hiram Abiff and the three people who killed him. But, certainly... this will just be a technical thing. Maybe they get craftsmen from other countries. I don't know. But I think the major thing is that if you study the secret societies, they all trace back to the Kabbalah, which was, of course, Jewish in origin. But that the Kabbalah actually came out of the mystery religions.
Babylon.
Babylon and certainly ancient Persia. And,
right.
So people do not understand this. There's a continuity from the ancient secret societies and mystery religions in Babylon through the Kabbalah, through Gnosticism, which was a Christian heresy, to the Knights Templar, to the Rosicrucians. and then right up to modern-day masonry. So it's all sort of fits together. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Sam, the Kabbalah is my point. I believe that this... I don't know everything about this Temple Faithful group, but I believe they're Hasidic. Are they?
I'm not positive. I'm familiar with, you know, the Hasidic Jewish movement, but I don't believe that the Temple Mount Faithful are all Hasidic. I
right.
could be wrong
and
in that.
Ultra-Orthodox, then, at least.
It would be Orthodox, certainly.
Yeah. Well, these are Kabbalistic Jews. And Freemasonry is Kabbalistic,
right.
at least in part.
All right. But, of course, but then there are many things that are Kabbalistic.
Right.
Certainly, the Kabbalah is the basis of Gnosticism, modern-day Gnosticism.
Mm-hmm. Right. But anyhow, you can see at least these two groups are not necessarily opposed, at least in this one spiritual vein.
You're absolutely right. Anything else you want to say, Mike?
Well, back to the UFOs. There's a really good little book I'm going to give you, Stan. You've been waiting for it. It's called The Invaders. Are you familiar with this? The author is R. Allen Street.
Don't know him at all.
Makes a case for UFOs being completely demonic.
Right. But
yeah.
I think that anybody who's really studied this, even if they're not coming from a Christian perspective, realizes they are metaphysical.
Well, this is a solid Christian author.
Right.
He works with the Christian, excuse me, the Criswell Theological Review.
All right.
He's on the internet. Some of his other papers might be interesting to you. I'm not sure. He doesn't have anything about UFOs that I've found on his website, but it's Criswell, Criswell, wordpress.com.
Okay.
Or just Allen Street. It's Streett.
Okay. Thanks
but,
very much.
But he makes, like I said, a very interesting case. This book goes back, it was written in 1975. So
well, that's 1 year before Dr. Thomas's book, The Omega Conspiracy. That's interesting.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Mike. And let's, of course, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But before we go on, I want, of course, Mike to get out his web. I want Lynn to get out his website and tell you about his book and how you can get his book. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. Go ahead.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. The best way to get is to go to my website, which is www.spiral, like a spiral staircase, spiraloflife.com, spiraloflife.com, and the book is right there. You can just follow the links and purchase it. It also comes autographed, and you can also sign up for the monthly newsletter, too, if you're interested, which is a continuation of Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural.
All right, of course, is there a telephone number people can use if they want to get the book?
Sure, 310-457-5564. That's 310-457-5564.
And it's really a fascinating book. I've really enjoyed it. You can remember the website, but Spiral of Life, because think of the DNA,
mm-hmm.
the DNA column, and of course it's in a spiral form. It's a spiral of life, and that's what this is really all about. And of course, all life gets back to the supernatural. There is no way that you can explain human life, plant life, animal life, unless there's a supernatural element that created this marvelous, marvelous world in which we live. Well, again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for Lynn, who has, of course, really studied this whole issue of the supernatural as it applies to prophecy, as it applies to politics, and certainly we're involved in a political battle now, and everybody thinks it's a battle between the Republicans and the Democrats. How do you approach people when they want to tell you that, you know, it's a battle between philosophies, conservative, liberal, Democrats, Republicans, right, left? What's your reply to them?
Well, I mean, and I agree with you. It's like if we just look at what, you know, Democrat, Republican, and all this political stuff that we're in an election year, obviously, and Obama and Hillary and Huckabee and, you know, McCain and everything. But really, I believe that there are forces that are unseen, supernatural forces, which are guiding, moving the governments of the earth. Not all the governments, and not seen all the time, but this unseen hand, which literally has started back, as you mentioned earlier, Dr. Stan, with the whole Babylonian mystery religions, It's a Luciferian cosmic conspiracy. It's never stopped, and it's pushing. Its goal is a one-world government, a one-world religious system. So it's interesting. It's, no matter who we really get into the White House, and really no matter what their worldview is, it will make no difference. It'll only delay the inevitable, and that inevitable has been laid down to us in prophecy, some of it by Jesus himself, specifically I'm speaking of in the book of Revelation, and also when Jesus gives that kind of a confidential briefing in Matthew 24 and Mark 13, Luke 21, when he talks about the things to look for, the signs of the end of the age. So, you know, Jesus himself, is because he's outside of time and sees everything simultaneously because he is God, can tell us these things. So he knows that that Lucifer, that Satan, is planning this last sort of stand, which we call Armageddon. The good news is the Lord himself returns and puts an end to it. And as Jesus himself says, unless those days were shortened, no flesh would survive. And that's very sobering to me. That's very, very sobering. So getting back on point, when we look at all these political machinations that are going on and just the upheaval, the political upheaval in the world, just for instance, over the weekend, Kosovo declared its independence. What many Americans don't know, and I find this just incredible, how the media has taken the idea of Serb and ethnic Albanian, and no one has any idea what that means, except that, well, these guys have been fighting and it looks pretty bad, and there's atrocities on both sides. What it really is that the Serbs are the Orthodox Christians, and the Croats, or the ethnic Albanians, are Muslims. And so this is what it's about. It's a religious war. But the media goes out of their way to make sure the American people are left in the dark and don't know what's really at stake here. And it goes back to when the Turks invaded that portion of Europe, which was then Yugoslavia, or became Yugoslavia and now is Kosovo, and took that land. And Muslims have a sort of, it's written in the Quran, once they take land for Allah, it's always Allah's. It can never go back. And so that's what this thing is really about. It goes back almost 600 years to this war. It's never gone away. The vitriol between the two parties is off the charts, and there's been atrocities on both sides. And for Bush to stand up and applaud Kosovo's independence, to me, is just an absolute absurdity. It's adding fuel to the fire.
And not only that, of course, but the people behind this whole movement were something known as the KLA. The Kosovo Liberation Movement was basically tied into Al-Qaeda.
There you go.
And there we are financing and helping the Al-Qaeda take over Kosovo.
Yes.
Why would we do something like that?
Weren't
they the terrible enemy?
It.
That's what we're fighting over there in Iraq, so that we fight them in Iraq, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, so they won't be here on the streets of New York, and then we're financing them in Kosovo? Nothing as it appears to be. That's what people must understand. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. It chills me in the sense that there are forces that we don't know, that we can't see, that are moving this thing and pushing this thing. For Bush to come out several months ago and to state that it doesn't matter who you pray to, it's all the same God. If you're a Muslim, a Christian, or a Jew, it's all the same God. Now, if he was in a pulpit, hopefully any pulpit in America, and said that on Sunday, on Monday morning, he wouldn't have a job. I mean, it's just an absurd statement to make, to somehow equate the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob with the God of the Muslims. They're not the same God. They're completely different. And so for Bush to say that, it's just, and he got a pass on in the media. I mean, the media kind of blinked a little bit. Few places ran with the story. You can Google it, and it will come up. And if you don't believe me, I mean, there it is. But it's like for him to say a statement like that, and then he stands up and he applauds Kosovo's independence on one hand, with the KLA and ties to Al Qaeda. And we talked about this on another show. And they talk about Afghanistan and how we're doing great over there. It's not the Taliban is not back in power, but it certainly is a resurgence of the Taliban. And in 2007 was the largest opium harvest in Afghanistan in 5 years. So what's going on here?
Well, nothing as it appears to be. And once you understand that, then everything begins to make sense. Well, certainly our guest is Len Marzulli. His book is Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. And you can get the book by going to spiraloflife.com, www.spiraloflife.com. Herman had called in. We lost him. Let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz, Ray, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I do. I've often wondered about the origin of the theory of reincarnation. Where did it originate? Was it Middle Eastern? Was it where did it come from?
What are your thoughts on that?
You know much about that, or
where do you think this idea of reincarnation came from?
Well, it comes from the Vedas, as far as I know, which is pretty much a Hindu philosophy. Also, Buddhist. We'll talk about it also, but Hindus really get behind the whole idea of reincarnation, the idea of a birth and death, and the only way to remove yourself from that cycle is to meditate and to attain some sort of a nirvana or a bliss, and that's how you move outside of the wheel of endless wheel of reincarnation. Of course.
Oh, but then you're opening yourself up to, the other side, really.
Well, this is why, in my opinion, it's utterly anathema in the sense that the Christian worldview is you're born once and you're judged, and that's what I believe. That's what I hold on to.
Yes.
I at one time believed in reincarnation. This is years ago. I actually had a guru, had my third eye open, and I practiced meditation for 2 or 3 years. This is obviously before I came to know the Lord. And so, having been in both camps, I will say this: that the meditation, why it will give you some sort of a spiritual high, never deals with your sin nature. And the only thing that can deal with our sin nature is Jesus and the blood of Jesus on the cross. That's what deals with it. That's what transforms us and changes us in a way that's just totally different than anything else I've ever found on this planet.
Yeah.
Ray, I would just add that I believe this whole idea of reincarnation was really this idea that you will never die.
Right.
And, of course, that comes right out of the book of Genesis. From the Garden of Eden. And so much of really what's going on today really can be traced back to those beliefs. And what were the two things the serpent promised? Why, if you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall be as God, and you shall never die. And that, of course, is what really these ideas, so many of the ideas are today, that we can become God and we will never die. And don't you believe us for a minute.
No.
We're fallible human beings, and we are going to die, and one day we're going to stand before the bar of judgment.
I had one other thing I want to say. Years ago, I was involved with the ARE, the Edgar Casey Foundation, and they had their headquarters in Virginia Beach. I remember going there, and they had all these life readings, and, he read people's health, their history, and what medicines to take, and, the whole thing. It was fascinating, but then I came to realize that, it was coming from another place.
Right.
That I thought. Eventually, I came to the understanding that what Edgar Casey was really doing was tapping into
the supernatural is what he did. And he really did help people. But of course, it did a terrible price. Anyway, God bless you, Ray.
Okay.
Thanks so very much. Let's go to Jack calling from Michigan again. Jack, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stanek. Comment first and the question. Would it be great if George Norrie were to interview Lynn?
He's actually done that.
I've been on several times.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Because on one of the episodes, Lynn, speaking of the shed blood of our Savior, Yeshua, a fella called in on one of those special lines of demonic possession, and he recounted how he called upon the precious blood of Jesus the Messiah, and the demons vanished.
Right.
Here's what George Norrie said. Well...
I love stories.
That may have worked for you, but he says that everybody tends to experience sleep paralysis on a regular basis. And I thought, what a way of denigrating. Anyway, my question for Lynn is the rapture. I keep hearing that there's this pre-trib rapture, and supposedly when we die, it's confusing.
All right, fine. Well, it is confusing. What are your thoughts on the rapture there, Jack? Do you have any thoughts on it one way or the other?
I do. I really do. There are basically three positions you can take. It's pre and post, and, of course, the new one is mid. And the fact that there's so much dissension in the body of Christ and so much infighting is crazy. The enemy, Satan, has us just where he wants us. Argue about whether it's before, middle, or after. And to me, it's absurd. I think what we do is this. It's kind of like the whole idea of of Calvinism versus Arminianism. Light touch. They're both right. You just have to figure out how they interact with each other. And if it's pre-trib, I'll be standing up and waving flags and rejoicing. I think what we need to do is know all three positions and keep a light touch on it, and watch. Jesus doesn't tell us, he tells us to watch. He doesn't tell us to figure out whether we're pre, post, or mid. He just tells us to watch for the signs.
Amen to that, and thanks very much, Jack. And I think it's so vitally important that we don't get sidetracked. And this is, so many people, believe in the pre-trib rapture is an article of faith. And it's not anywhere in the Bible that there
right.
could be pre-trib rapture. I mean, some of my best friends are pre-trib rapture. And some of my best friends are post-trib rapture.
There you go.
And I always love the remark by Walter Martin, that he never found anything in the scriptures that assured him that there would be a pre-trib rapture, but he prayed he was wrong. Well, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here. Well, Lynn, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, great.
You've got 3 minutes, so go ahead.
All right. Well, I would say this to your listeners, Dr. Stan. Politics, prophecy, and the supernatural, the coming great deception, and the Luciferian endgame really looks at the current political landscape, where we are, and kind of asks the question, are we headed, is the stage being set for the prophetic, for the prophecies that were uttered, some of them 2,500 years ago, is the political stage being set, or so these prophecies that have been written begin to be fulfilled in our lifetime, and as we see them being fulfilled, will they then trigger supernatural events that will literally shake the worldview of every single person on this planet? It will cause every person to stop and look. And remember that 2 Thessalonians says that, because they did not believe the truth, God sends them a powerful lie. Strong delusion. So we know this thing is coming, and it begs the question, what is coming? What are we to look at? It doesn't tell us how Satan, it doesn't pinpoint Satan's lies and lying wonders, but we know it's coming. And the fact that there's 10,000 UFOs and the abduction phenomenon, in my opinion, is completely demonic and satanic in every way. And many of the other signs, like the crop circles and the cattle mutilations, all point that this is going to be the coming great deception that the Bible warns us of. And that's why I would suggest to your readers to get the book, go to my website, www.spiral, like a spiral staircase, a spiral of life, spiraloflife.com, and get the book and then pass it on to a couple of friends.
Well, it's really a fascinating book. It's fascinating reading. And it's so important that people do understand there really is a supernatural dimension. And if you are a Christian, you have to believe in the supernatural, but we don't talk about that in our churches. We should. We should be preparing the Christians for the difficult times that lie ahead, because my fear, of course, is going to be a great falling away. We're told that it's 2 Thessalonians, it will be. And it will become because people will not understand what's happening. We'll begin looking for other explanations, and of course, there'll be false leaders out there. We've got them today. We've got all sorts of people out there, whether it be Reverend Moon or mm-hmm. some of the others who claim that they are the, Appleworth, I think it was his name. They were the space cadets. They were waiting for this. They were going
right.
to get on this.
I remember those guys. Right, right here in California.
Yeah, right. And
yep. Just
don't be mistaken. Don't fall in for their lies. I mean, the Bible has it all, everything you need to know. Read it, understand it, believe it. Lynn, God bless you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Lynn Mazzulli and his book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural is excellent. spiraloflife.com. That's spiraloflife.com. On the internet, if you can't get it, you can always call us and we'll put you in touch with him. But we think it's an important book, and certainly we want to help Lynn get that out. Now, at this time, we certainly would also like to remind you, we actually have a couple of books. We have one called Alien Intervention, and it simply goes into the fact that the UFOs are demonic manifestations. There really is another dimension out there, and this, of course, is a demonic manifestation. We have a four-tape set called The Supernatural, and we have a book, that goes with that, entitled The Beautiful Side of Evil. It's a story of Joanna Michelson, who is a medium, and she was deeply involved in the occult. She witnessed all of these supernatural events, and sort of like Edgar Casey, who was able to cure so many people, so the faith healer that Joanna Michelson worked with was able to do psychic surgery on hundreds of people, and she actually assisted in over 400 surgical procedures. Of course, they were not done in a hospital. They were done in a small room, and they were done with a pair of dirty scissors, and they would actually reach into the abdomen or reach into the head and pull out the tumors, and really remarkable. You need to read what Joanna has to say. And of course, she was totally taken in with this. She thought it must be of God, because these people who'd been given up by conventional medicine were cured. And then, of course, she began to realize this was satanic, demonic, and she went back years later to interview these people, and they all were demonically possessed. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, there is a supernatural out there, and we need, of course, to get that information out. We need your help to get the truth out, and that's why my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is so important, and of course we have that on CD as well. And then, of course, we also have the talk on the forbidden secret. What is the forbidden secret? Well, it's a secret that's been passed down from ancient Babylon to the Persians, through the mystery religions, through ancient Egypt, certainly through the Kabbalah, through Gnosticism, through the Templars, through the Rosicrucians, and so many of the great men of the past, and the philosophers of the past, and the military leaders of the past, had tapped into this supernatural power. Did you ever wonder how Alexander the Great, with an army of 35,000 Macedonians, was able to take on the army of Darius the Great with a million men and elephants, and Alexander won? I mean, do you think that happened simply because he was such a great military general, or a fluke of fate? Of course not. He was deeply involved in the mysteries and the mystery religions, and it tapped into the supernatural power. And we simply quote a book written by Plutarch in the first century AD called The Age of Alexander. And Alexander wrote to Aristotle at that time all about the mystery religions, and how Aristotle had taught Alexander the mystery religions. These are things you're never going to get in your schools, you're never going to get in your classes, you're never going to hear them discussed in church, but you must understand the supernatural. You don't want to ever try to contact this yourself, but you need to understand what's going on so that you can counter what's going on and help us get people to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or, of course, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. We talked about a four-tape or four-CD set on the supernatural, the book on alien intervention. We talked about the book Brotherhood of Darkness, and of course the DVD on the forbidden secret, and of course let me suggest the four-tape set on the satanic crimes. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are satanic crimes. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back again right here at the same station, may the Lord be with you.